Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today on a Farmer Friday. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show for you. We will be answering a number of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag. If you've got a question for us, you can send those to radio@agphd.com. That's our email address. Or you can just call us here. We are at the Morton Studio today, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can also send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, before we get to the AgPhD mailbag, just real quick, I was just going to make this comment about we've been out doing some emergence tests on our farm. And, you know, from plant to plant, we want all the plants to come up at about the same time. But here's the thing. We aren't getting any growing degree units. We've literally had, like, I don't know, 15 growing degree units all week this week on our farm. So it's almost nothing. So yesterday, I was talking to a couple agronomists about how many growing degree units does it take for each leaf to come out on a corn plant. So in other words, we know that if a plant is two leaf stages behind, for sure it's a weed. And if it's even one leaf stage behind, it's not going to be real good. So we'd like to be within a half leaf stage or less. Well, what is a leaf stage for GDUs? It's 82. So I was looking up this study yesterday from Purdue. I think they had an 11-year study, and they found that it's 82 growing degree units or growing degree days per leaf stage. So, and that's from emergence all the way up to V10 corn. So you know that if you have 82, so once you see emergence, your next 82, that's for leaf one. Your next 82, leaf two, and so on. So anyway, you want to try to be within 40 GDUs in terms of emergence for a half leaf stage. And at that point, you're probably doing pretty good. But just understand, boy, if you're 160 growing degree units off, you're two leaf stages behind, and that is for sure a weed out in your field. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, first question comes from Dwayne, and he said he is from Saskatchewan. He's been farming for a long time, mainly growing wheat, canola, and oats, a bit of barley. And he said, I'm wondering what spray nozzles you like best for herbicides. And also, if I want more information from you guys, where can I subscribe and where should I look?
Go ahead.
Well, Dwayne, when we look at herbicide application with spray nozzles, there's a lot of difference. And when you're talking about small grains, oftentimes we hear 2,4-D getting thrown into the mix. That one's just a little bit different than some of the other products, like I would say even Husky. I'd really like to go with a little bit smaller droplet and trying to get great coverage with 2,4-D, though I want a medium-sized to larger-sized droplet just to minimize any drift potential with that one. Anything different you would say, Brian, on the herbicide front?
Well, I agree with you 100%. So to add anything more to that, I would throw in what else are we tank mixing? You know, we got to think about fungicide, for example, where we do need really good coverage. But if there's, like you said, 2,4-D in there, well, you always have to look at what's the thing we're most concerned about with drift. So even though with fungicide, we'd say, yep, we want smaller droplets, if we have something in there that could cause a problem to a neighboring crop, now we've got an issue. But, Darren, I'll say this. We don't know exactly where he farms or what the situation is. If he's 2 miles away from any neighbor, then do we care? Could it be a small spray droplet? I think it personally could. So anyway, there are a lot of spray nozzles out there. We do a lot of work with Hypro, for example. And I guess if you want to go to our Spray Tips app, Spray Tips Guide app, you certainly can. We do have an AgPhD, a free AgPhD Spray Tip Guide that you could download for your smartphone or your tablet.
All right. Thanks, Dwayne. Really appreciate it.
I should mention with that Spray Tips Guide, you can look up a bunch of different products, and it will tell you what our typical recommendations are for a spray nozzle. Go ahead.
Did you mention that? I'm sorry. I was looking at the next question here, and I didn't hear if you talked about the Ag PhD Insider magazine.
I did not.
You can also go to agphdinsider.com, Dwayne, and subscribe to our magazine if you would like as well. Take the next question here from Abdul, who says, I've got some alkaline lands. Mine's too high in a pH to raise great crops. And I'm looking at sulfur and needing to get that applied. I'm wondering how much calcium sulfate I could apply per acre. I feel it takes 2 years for gypsum to fully absorb and work, and I'm wondering if it will help my high pH in addition to my saline soils.
I can't answer that question for sure unless I look at a soil test. So when we start talking about high pH, the question is always, what's causing the problem? Now, obviously, he gave away some of the issue, and that is high saline. Right away, that tells us most likely we have a drainage problem. So the first thing I'm usually thinking about is drain tile. Could I be putting tile in to improve drainage? The next thing I'm going to think about is how much calcium do I have? If I don't have 60 or 65% calcium in my base saturation test or more, I have a problem and I need more calcium out there. And maybe that's where the gypsum thing is coming from. So let's put it this way. Gypsum will most likely help your problem if you have, number one, I'll leave the tile out for a second. But gypsum will most likely help you if you are short on calcium. If you need more calcium, yes, on the gypsum. If you do not need more calcium, then the gypsum probably is not going to help you. If you already, you said saline soil, now there's a difference between saline and sodic. Sodic soil means we've got sodium out there. It's not yet turned into a salt form. Salts are leachable. When you say saline soil, that tells me salt. Salts, again, are leachable. So that means if I, number one, have good, a way to get rid of the water, like tile, and two, I have good calcium levels, then typically the saline problem is gone. So, I mean, that will... It'll take a little bit of time to get rid of all that salt, but it will be gone as long as you don't add more salt to the problem. So if you've got, let's say, irrigation water that's high in salt, you're adding lots of manure, those things need to stop because that's contributing to the problem.
Thanks for the questions, Abdul. And if you want to take a complete soil analysis and send that in, we'd be happy to take a look at that. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions after this.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from Agra US is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
Imagine the perfect flow of grain from the field to the bin. Imagine a single rotor that ensures both quality and productivity. An advanced system that optimizes harvest settings on the go. You don't have to imagine. With features like AFS Harvest Command, an axial flow combine from Case IH always delivers the perfect flow for your operation. Find out how. Talk to your Case IH dealer today.
We started utilizing the Dura React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio today on Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Let's head over to Minnesota. We've got Ken with us right now. Ken, how are you doing?
Hey, good. Things are good this spring.
Excellent. Well, that's much better than last year for sure, huh?
Quite a difference in years. This is about as nice a spring as I can ever remember planting into.
All right,
beautiful, so, beautiful ground. It's so mellow.
So we got in early, and I know on our farm we're starting to see some crop popping out of the ground. Are you seeing that too? And what's the weather forecast calling for in your area?
Yes, I do see some corn spiking through. A few guys that went in real early, you can roll their corn already. And the forecast tonight, 28 degrees is what they're talking, but I think we're nearly to a full moon too, which would make that even colder. So I don't think it's going to hurt our corn at this point yet, but we don't really need that cold weather.
No, we don't. It's interesting. Last year, I've got a friend that farms down in Texas, and they got nipped by a little bit of frost, and they were really, really nervous about it because it was so unusual. And I just love how, Ken, you're like, it might get down to 28, and yeah, it's not a real big deal. I love how calm you are. So obviously, you've seen that before.
Oh, we have, I guess. I know there were guys that were definitely not going to plant for that until a week after the insurance date. They were really afraid of it. They'd seen too many times to get froze off, so they were absolutely waiting. And I just kind of like you guys had said, the ground is so beautiful. It was warm out. I had a hard time waiting, so we went with it. And we just got a few beans left is all to do, and a few post spraying to do on them, and pretty much have things wrapped up yet. Going to work on some pasture spraying would be the next deal to do. So
yeah, pastures are looking pretty good in our area. How about up your way?
They are, yes. It seems to be coming around now since we've got about an inch of rain here the other day, and before that we only had 3/10, and things were just kind of standing still, weren't doing anything at all, so it was quite dry, so it needed that perk up to get things going. Now things are going to town real good. It's about 50-ish here today, and little breezy, kind of holding off in the spraying at this point too. Yet wait till tonight to do some spraying. So,
yeah, it's going to be interesting the next few days to see exactly what this weather does. But like you said, Ken, a lot of the crop pretty small and should be just fine even as we cool down a bit. Talking to Ken over in Minnesota, great planting conditions ahead of schedule over there. That's awesome. Good luck to you, Ken, here in this coming weather that's coming through here. Hopefully everything turns out just fine.
It should. Yeah, thank you, Darren. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks. Let's head down to Kentucky. We've got Joel with us right now. Joel, you going to catch a freeze down there too, or is it not going to get quite that cool?
Well, they can't decide. They keep changing the forecast on us a little bit, degree or two up or down, but we are officially under a freeze warning as far as National Weather Service is concerned.
Yeah, I just thought that was crazy. Now, Minnesota, South Dakota, absolutely. That's just part of the game up here. But Kentucky, I wasn't
right.
Really expecting that one in May.
Right. Yeah, and this is going to end up being our second one. We had one a few weeks ago that gave us some heavy frost and some cold temperatures. One of the weather sites here in the county showed just below 26 degrees right before daylight one morning, and they're still got the verdict out, but no, we got some damage on our wheat, you know, because wheat was starting to come fully ahead and get ready for fungicide applications, and we've got some guys in our area that's probably got 10 to 50% damage depending on variety and planting date. And then I talked to a fellow north of us toward Owensburg, and he does some scouting, Mr. Phil Needham, and he said there's some guys that are going to cut hay out of their wheat. They're done for the year. So it's a little weird to have that kind of weather down here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, talk to us about the corn, about any full season beans you got. How are they looking right now?
We have gotten finished planting corn, and as of this past Wednesday, our last corn was merged. It came up in 2 weeks' time, and we're pretty tickled with that, with these cold temps around. Of course, they could get wet just a little bit, but I don't think we have any chance of loss there on ours in particular. We've got some bigger corn than ours in the area. Not a lot of soybeans planted, but there are some. We changed our package around a little bit on soybeans and moved up to a 3-6 maturity on one field, and we planted them real early, and we drilled them, and they about got the field. It looks almost like a yard. It might be a little iffy on them how they go through this, but they came up good. I was tickled with that.
Is that up ground or is that low ground where you got those 3-6s?
It is up ground.
Okay.
Yeah, we got away from our river bottoms and anything close to a low pocket where we thought frost or anything. It's one of the higher fields that we got. We chose to put them on, and I think if anything protects us at the elevation will.
You bet. You bet. And we're talking to Joel down in Kentucky, and you hear people talking about frost. If you just tuned in, you may be thinking, wait, where's Joel? Like North Dakota or something? No, he's a long way south from there. So getting some strange weather here in May, to be sure. So what about weed control so far, Joel? You going to have to be out spraying anytime once this cold weather passes through, or are things holding pretty well?
Well, things are holding pretty well. We got pushed a lot later than we like to be on doing our before planting burn down program. But I guess it's kind of going to work to our advantage in the end because our fields are still holding pretty good. So it's going to give us another week or two very easily to wait before we have to do our post application. So, sometimes something that looks like it's not the good deal ends up being not so bad after you go a few more weeks on the calendar.
Yeah, you're right. You know, we had a lot of guys nervous about that. Man, we're getting in so early, and if these warm weather weeks continue, we're going to have so much weed pressure, we're going to have to fight them an extra time. And then here we go. We turn cold, and we might turn out okay in the end. Talking with Joel down in Kentucky. Joel, good luck to you. I know we got some cold weather coming through. Hopefully it blows through pretty quick, and you get back to good growing conditions. Good luck here.
Yeah. Good luck to y'all, too.
You bet. Thanks. Yeah, the frost stuff is going to be interesting. Got a lot of questions that have come in on that. And then we hit a few of those yesterday. Got one today from a little different geography. Got one from Joseph here. He said, I'm writing from Hungary. I've been catching up on your online content here and trying to learn a lot. Just wondering, do you give advice to people even if they're from a different country? Absolutely, Joseph. Go ahead and send your questions to us. And if you've got soil tests or any information like that or pictures, we would love to see those as well. That all helps put together the story.
As he said, the different country, I'm thinking, we are in the United States. We take calls and emails almost every single day from people in Canada. We are broadcast all across Canada. So anyway, we do get a tremendous amount of information from around the world, and it really helps Darren and me be better agronomists too.
Yep, no question about it. Got a little bit of feedback from John in Kansas. Yesterday we were talking about increasing protein levels in wheat. He said, I want to share a story with you. We had a field we split 50-50 and fertilized one half where we put on nitrogen in the fall. The other half we split applied, put on urea late winter and 28% late April. The yield difference ended up being negligible. The field averaged around 90. But the protein was quite different. Where we split applied the N, we gained almost a full point of protein.
I was gonna say,
and we get a premium for that. So that was a pretty good deal for us.
It shows you that some of that fall applied nitrogen had been lost.
Yep. Hey, thanks for the feedback. Really appreciate that, John. We'll get back to more of your calls and agronomic questions right after this.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2savethree.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up Seed Treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPHD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. That means we're taking your calls and agronomic questions all through the show here in the Morton studio today. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can email us as well, radio at agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty, or Darren Hefty. Well, we just had our last question that came in. Would you give any advice to somebody that's in a different country? Well, here we go. First caller up, Riley from Manitoba. Riley, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I heard the question and I thought, well, maybe I can shed some light on that.
Well, I thought, you know, Joseph probably isn't going to drive here. He's not going to drive to our farm like you could, but...
yeah, no, it's... I appreciate all the advice you give us for pretty much free, and yeah, it's we really appreciate this resource. It's been very good for our farm to have you guys working alongside us.
Oh, well, thanks, Riley. Well, talk to us about your farm. What's happened this spring? Has it been a good year for you getting out into fields, and have you got crop that's up, or what are you seeing out there?
This spring has been a little bit challenging so far. We're just coming off of 4 years of dry weather, and last fall it started raining and it didn't stop for about 3 weeks, so we froze up really wet, and that has caused some challenges this spring, even just with getting the frost out of the ground. There's spots and fields where it's bone dry, you can drive anywhere, and then you get to a spot where the frost hasn't come up yet and you sink your seeder in the ground. So it's been a little bit challenging that way. We have about 3/4 of spring wheat in the ground. And that is about, and that is pretty late for us normally. We would normally have all our spring wheat in the ground by today.
Yep. Yeah, that's for sure. I know a lot of our listeners in North Dakota, we've heard some of the pretty similar stories that there's some spots out in the field where they just can't even believe it, and it's May, but that's just the cards were dealt this year. So, you know, what are you hoping to still get done? What's your timeline here coming up the next few weeks for certain crops and dates that you might switch to something different?
Corn, normally I say we don't plant corn after the 15th of May. This year that will probably be a very hard and fast date with the markets the way they're looking. But I'm still planning to put corn in the ground. And soybeans and canola, we're going to switch over to lots of that if it stays wet, just because we can get it in late. We don't lose as much yield potential the later we go putting them in the ground.
Sure.
Compared to, say, a spring wheat, or even we have a lot of oats planned to go in the ground, but those ones too, after the 1st of May, every week you drop off probably 10% of your yield, if not more.
Yeah, so. Yeah, not a good deal. Talk to us about the canola then. If you've got wet conditions, how does that handle wet?
As far as putting it in the ground, what we would do if it's really wet, we would get a floater to broadcast some urea and some sulfur, and we'll mix the canola seed in right in with that, and then we'll go behind with a heavy harrow or some sort of tillage tool, field cultivator, to mix it in. And we've had very good luck in the past wet years getting a stand. What hurts canola is mid to late June rains, like those 3-inch, 4-inch pounding rains.
Sure.
When the plants are small, they just do not compete. They just cannot handle that big rain.
Okay.
So that's more so where we're worried with canola. But as far as getting canola into cold, wet soils, it actually comes up pretty good.
When you talk about broadcasting canola, what kind of seeding rate do you run with then?
A very high one.
I was wondering. Well, I mean, and it's a real thing, because, I mean, you're paying for that seed by the pound. So if you've got to put a little more out there, I get it. If that's just the only way a guy can get it done and it works, well, that's having a crop's better than none. But it does add a little bit to the seeding cost.
For sure. So for me, to put it in perspective, we're about $12 to $12.30 a pound for canola, and that's in Canadian dollars, so don't be too shocked to my American friends. but no, that we would seed that at probably 5 to 7 pounds an acre then at that point, and maybe we might even go up as far as 8 or 9, depending on seed size. But and put it in perspective, when we're seeding it with just our drill, we're putting it in at 4 to 3.5 pounds, kind of is our target most years.
Sure. Yep. Yeah, it's interesting, all the things that happen and the ways we have to do things when the year kind of is a little funky for us. Last question for you. Spring wheat population, what did you run on that this year? Did you change anything as things have gotten later now? I mean, is it going to be a different pop, or are you still run with the same one?
So far, we've... we've varied our pop across the farm. I don't know what the right population is. I hear the boys from Australia and New Zealand come and they talk about populations, and I'm still trying to get my head around that low population.
Me too. But those guys are awful successful. You can't argue with that.
Exactly. And then I listen to a guy from your neck of the woods, like Lee Lubbers, talk about 1.6 to almost 2 million pop. And so I have a variance between probably 750,000 all the way up to 2.2 million.
Very interesting. Yeah, that's going to be like managing several different crops then with that kind of change
exactly.
Out there.
Exactly. Yep. So we're trying to figure out what we should seed it at. And then also by variety, we're changing it too. There's some varieties we like to push a little harder than others.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year learning in Manitoba for sure. Talking with Riley up there. Riley, thank you so much. Really appreciate you calling in. Thanks for all the kind words as well.
Yep, thank you. Stay safe, stay healthy.
Those are important messages, no doubt about that. Brian, I got a question from Andrew in North Dakota that came in. He said, in spring wheat, he's tissue testing every week. He's soil testing regularly through the year just to see what's going on with nutrients. He said he soil tested every other week last year just to see what happened out in the field. And what he's found is consistently low levels of boron and copper. So yep. He said this year he bought some liquid boron and liquid copper to apply to the wheat. He was planning on doing it with two foliar applications, adding some Nutex EDA with that as well.
Where'd you say? You said North Dakota.
North Dakota, yep. And he said first application he was going to do at herbicide timing and second at flag leaf.
Okay.
Now, his stream bar's 28% at about jointing, and now he's kind of thinking about it. I wonder if we should just use the stream bars to put on the boron and the copper instead of putting that on over the top.
I wouldn't.
He said it's rented ground, okay. So he doesn't want to put a whole bunch of dry on and build it up. Oh. He'd rather feed the crop. But if that was your goal of just feeding the crop, how would you do it?
I'd put the dry on. And I'll tell you why. It's way cheaper. Way, 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 way cheaper. And if you're in North Dakota and you have heavy soil, your ground's frozen half the year or more, then I'm looking at, and I know you don't have a lot of rainfall, typically, then you don't have a lot of risk of losing that boron. With the copper especially, that's going to stay there for a long time. I don't care what your situation.
Well, but and if you're super short, where you're seeing it all the way through the year, right. I agree with you, Brian. You could put that boron on cheaper, dry, and then what you can do after that point is go with some low rates of liquid to try and supplement it during the year with your foliar.
Yeah, so I'm not suggesting you build everything up to this enormously huge level, but I would do a little combination of both. I get a little bit of dry boron out. With copper, we're talking copper sulfate, and I would spray that out on the surface of the soil, and then I would till it in. And the reason why is because copper doesn't move very well in the soil. It's a little bit like zinc and phosphorus. We just get concerned if you lay them on the surface of the soil that they're not going to be down into your root system. So with the foliar feeding, you can absolutely do that. But the thing is, it's kind of short term. It is short term. So you're going to see a bump for maybe a couple of weeks, and that's about it. Now, by doing it twice, that really helps. And by doing it at those good timings, that's going to help. But I don't think you're going to get to where you want to go unless you start putting some out in the soil as well. So I'm not saying you have a bad plan. Your plan's fine. I just even add a little bit more to it and get a little bit out on the soil.
I'd be a little cautious, too, with the copper. We've seen that do some burning. So I'd be just a little bit nervous to get too carried away with that copper rate. It's got to be a pretty low rate. Otherwise, I'd be worried about that. That's another reason I would prefer to
but,
do it.
But by the same token, copper can be a bactericide. It actually can control some bacteria on leaves if you use it at the right rate. Yeah, too high, you burn leaves. Too low, and you don't do a whole lot in terms of giving an advantage to the crop. Well, stay tuned. We'll be back with more of your questions right after this.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, being able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds.
Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
It came in waves, ruthlessly eliminating the new spectrum of hard-to-kill grassy weeds in wheat. Everest 3.0 herbicide. A new formulation makes it brutal on yellow foxtail, foxtail barley, and other tough grasses. Everest 3.0 gets the weeds you see and the ones you know are coming, with flush-after-flush control. Ask your retailer about Everest 3.0. Wave after wave of grassy weed domination. Always read and follow label directions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today, taking your calls and agronomic questions throughout the show. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head out to Maryland. We've got Kevin with us right now. Kevin, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. Doing well. Just riding the waves of up and down of agriculture, I guess.
Yeah, that's for sure. You don't have to be in ag very long to see that it doesn't stay up very long, and hopefully the downs don't last as long. They seem like they last forever, but we just keep plugging along. What's your situation out in the fields right now? You got crop in the ground, and if so, how does it look?
No, well, we've got our winter wheat and barley crops are moving along. My winter barley crop, I'd probably had the best barley crop overall I'd ever had, one of the top three I'd ever had in my life. And the seed, it's all for seed, and the inspector was out last week and walked it and informed me I've got 30 to 40% yield reduction from frost damage. And now we're calling for, we've got wheat flowering now, and going to have frost this weekend. So the wheat will take it a little better than the barley does, but I've got friends with potatoes and tomatoes and everything in the ground, and they're sweating bullets.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I believe it. It's just crazy. I know we were talking to Joel down in Kentucky a little earlier, and he said they don't even have a whole lot of soybeans in the ground. It's supposed to get super cold, and they've got – you know, corn that's got some size to it already. So yeah, they're a little nervous, and their wheat took a big hit this just a few weeks back too with that last frost. So yeah, that one's been interesting. What about corn acres in your area? Are guys putting corn in? Are we still working on that? Is it all done?
No, in the lighter sandier ground, it's in, and it's struggling, all different colors, and really struggling to get out of the ground. Personally, I haven't planted a grain of corn or a soybean. Both planters are sitting still. We've been extremely wet, and I've been struggling to put in some drain tile, and the weather conditions just haven't been conducive. After 2019, I really didn't want to start out replanting in 2020, so I kind of waited because I didn't want to have to do it twice.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'd rather do it once than twice. I was just talking to a farmer this morning, farm's about 40 miles away from us, and he kind of made the same thing. He's like, yep, we had to get it in really early so we'd be able to plant it twice and have plenty of time. And he was joking, of course, and I don't think he's going to have to replant, at least not from this frost scare. A lot of his stuff was still under the soil safe. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. Now, you mentioned one thing there, Kevin, that I wanted to come back on is tile. You said you're putting in some tile. Talk to us about tiling in Maryland, because everybody knows how big a deal water is in your state and nutrients and these kinds of things. Talk to us about tile. Is it tough to get done in your area? Tough to get approvals for, or not too bad?
No, it's not too bad. We don't really need the local soil conservation district comes out, helps us lay it out, and looks at the plan that we're working with, and if they implement that in our soil management plan on our farm, and that's about the only step we have to go through. We don't have any county permits or any. Or any state permits we have to get. It just has to make sure we're not draining wetlands or you know, working with on highly erodible or wetlands where we're trying to recreate new farmland.
Sure, sure. Yeah, no, that's good. That's
and
good
a lot of our drain tile, you know, we're 3 to 5 feet above sea level here. So a lot of our drain tile is to keep our water table down more than draining surface moisture away.
Absolutely.
We're trying to keep the subsurface water table down so it doesn't, our roots have, aren't waterlogged from the high water table.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, we're doing the same thing here. We're more concerned about that water table and making sure we've got plenty of oxygen in the soil for our roots and all our little microbes in the top few feet. Different situation. We're 3 to 5 feet above sea level. We're 1,500 feet above sea level here. And, yeah, our water table has been pretty high, though, this spring, no doubt about that. Hey, Kevin, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Good luck to everybody on the East Coast with the frost concerns coming up as well. Hopefully things turn out better than what they're saying.
Yeah, well, 2020 might make 2019 look like a cakewalk around here.
I would not say the same thing here, Kevin. It's much, much better than it was that year when guys didn't even get their wheels turning out in the field at all. Well, hey, good luck to you, Kevin. Thank you. Really appreciate talking to you.
Yeah. Be safe. Have a good season.
I bet. You as well. Brian, get some questions from Clayton up in New York. He sent a soil sample for us here. He said, I live east of Buffalo, New York, and I've got some Niagara silt loam soils. I've got a question regarding my hay field's performance and a soil test I just pulled. I've been getting 3 cuttings per year, and unfortunately, the cuttings just go down significantly in the amount of pounds that I'm able to harvest. By the 3rd cutting, I might only get 6 or 10 inches of regrowth. So I applied a couple tons of high calcium lime per acre and tried to get the pH up, which hopefully will help. The results also showed I had some pretty low phosphorus. They say I've got a medium level of K. Wondering your thoughts on that. That I've got plenty of calcium right now, a decent amount of magnesium. Just wondering what your thoughts are with this recommendation. I've got Cornell's recommendations of what they think I should apply. Just wondering what you think.
Yeah, let's put it this way. What this soil test shows is there are 2 pounds of phosphorus in the soil and 101 pounds of potassium in the soil. I would like the phosphorus number to be somewhere in the 200 to 300 pound range if it was my farm. And I'd like the potassium level to be in the, 500, 800 pound range if it was my farm. So the whole point where I'm going with this, I'm not saying you have to build your soils to that level, but the point is, you're just short on P and K. So the good news is you figured it out. You need P and K. And I mean, the bad news is obviously those things cost money. You got your pH right now. You're 6.6 for pH. Fine. You're in good shape. But just like if it's Cornell, he said Cornell, like they're recommending here that you put on some N, P, and K, that's absolutely what you need. The challenge with grass is it's a perennial crop. And when you put on P and K, they don't get into the ground very well. Especially the phosphorus. Now, potassium it'll eventually get there. The phosphorus, it just takes a really long time. So usually what we tell people when they're going to put in any perennial crop is to really load up your ground deep in the soil, 4 inches, 6 inches, 8 inches, 10 inches, whatever, with phosphorus. then you don't have the risk of losing the phosphorus. The only way phosphorus is going to leave that field is with erosion or with crop removal. But when you're literally taking the grass off, you're taking everything off the field, I mean, you just continue to deplete that soil more and more. So yeah, you're just really low on phosphorus, you're really low on potassium, and then I'd look at the micronutrients too. All you gave us was zinc and iron. I'd like to know, how are we doing on boron? How are we doing on the secondary nutrient sulfur? I mean, copper. I mean, there are a number of other nutrients that I would look at if it was me, but it appears at least to be a fertility issue.
All right. Thanks for the question. Get this one from Adam in South Dakota. He said, we always use a field cultivator on our farms for weeds, seed bed prep, incorporating fertilizer, pre-emerge fertilizer, those kinds of things. Do you have any methods to determine if the soil is fit to be run over with the field cultivator? Just wondering if there's a line between just because it isn't working doesn't mean it's beneficial. Or just because it is working doesn't mean it's beneficial.
Yep. The problem is, every year is a little bit different, and you reach a point where you go, I don't care what the soil is like. If it's just a little bit on the wet side, I'm going to go anyway. But a lot of times people will just take that soil and they'll try to ribbon it out through their fingers. So you ball it up in your hand, you ribbon it out, push it out with your thumb. And if it's sticking and it's not crumbling, yep, you got to make a change. We'll be right back.
Hey, Adam, new drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic insecticides from Atticus LLC. Unwanted insects are a nuisance, but they're no match for Serpent from Atticus. Serpent delivers economical, fast-acting, broad-spectrum control to help your corn, soybeans, and wheat crops thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG.
We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why Farm Shop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to farmshopmfg.com to order today.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
It's Farmer Friday and Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Brian, got a quick one here from Luke. He said, what do you think the best brassica is for weed suppression between rapeseed, mustards, radishes, turnips. I think turnips might be the best. What do you think? I probably agree with you, Luke. I think you, just the leaf area there, but you know, seeding rate is going to have a big deal, timing, all that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, but none of them are good.
Oh, but, I don't agree with that at all, Brian.
What do you mean? For weed suppression?
Crop canopy is the best thing for weed suppression.
That's right. And how tall do any of those crops get?
Tell you what, we got plenty of height out of our turnips.
How much?
I don't know. Well, it depends on how long you have them growing. If we plant like right after the Ag PhD field day,
yep.
We're in the middle of the summer.
Yep,
and
correct.
We get tons of growth out there.
Well, how tall?
At least knee-high solid.
Exactly. That's my point. Only knee-high. Now, if I go out there and I raise corn, I raise forage sorghum, I raise a lot of other crops, I'm going to get my crop way taller. Even oats that we've raised right at the field day site, we've had that shoulder high before. So, I mean, and I realize that's really an exception for oats. You don't typically see it that tall, but for us, it got that tall. My point is, with any of the brassicas, well, I shouldn't say any, that's a big statement, but with most of the brassicas, they are not real great at weed suppression. I don't know which one is the best, but I would say if weed suppression is your number one goal out there, you should probably pick something other than a brassica. But my assumption here is you just decided, hey, I need the brassica, and that's fine. You're just trying to figure out what the best is for weed suppression. And what'd you say, Darren, turnips, you think?
Yeah, my thought would be turnips.
Okay. I can live with that.
All right, thanks for the question. Really appreciate that, Luke. Let's head down to Georgia. We've got Tom on the line with us right now. Tom, how are you?
I'm okay. How about y'all guys today?
Well, pretty good, but I'm a little nervous because I heard you had a tile question, and I thought, oh no, if Tom and Brian get talking here on tiling, this could be the end of the whole show. It'll take all the rest of the time.
Well, no, this is tough for me. All right, we got a new farm that we purchased, and anyway, the tile was put down in the late '60s, and I've got a map that shows about where it is, but it's not accurate. But down to about 100 yards. So I do have the end of the tile where it's working and it's functional and all that, but I want to find the other ends of it and where it's actually located. So do you have a way to locate tile without digging it up?
Honestly, the way that we recommend people do it in the northern part of the United States or in Canada is when the frost is coming out of the ground, you have a drone up there and you're taking pictures and you can usually see almost exactly where it's at.
Or if you've got a super, super overly wet year, you
yes.
can often see where those tile lines are by flying over the field. And just seeing where the field is still green and healthy
yep.
and where it's yellow and stressed.
And for you, that might be about it because you might never – do you even get
– We never freeze.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's my point. So I don't have a great
answer
for
you. That's why, Tom, when we talk to folks like you, people are like, why do you live in South Dakota when you could live there?
So, Tom, I wish there was some easy thing that I would tell you that I could tell you. That's what we do here where we live, and you absolutely can see it. To Darren's point, sure, you could do it in a flood year, but, I mean, when's the next time that's going to happen when you've got all this rain? You want to know now. I don't have a real good way for you to try to figure it out now. I don't know. Maybe you can talk to some tile people in your area that have some other idea. But I've been around tiling for a long time now, and I've never had anybody give me a real great answer for someone who lives in the South like you do where you don't have frost.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Well, I appreciate your input.
Hey, you know, the one good thing, Tom, I would say is if there was some tile put in back in the 60s. It's still working today. You think about that. Over 50 years ago, and it's still working. I'd be pretty happy with that. That's a long time. We have some tile. We found some old clay tile.
Yeah.
Some old clay tile was put in 100 years ago. And, you know, it's not working well, but at least there's a little bit of it. But, yeah, I mean, we often say some of those old guys, they knew what the heck they were doing back then. So, anyway, hopefully you can add on to it, find it, whatever. But, yeah, I wish we had a better way for you. That's all about all we know.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Thank you kindly.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it.
All right. Got a couple of things here, Brian, about quack grass. And I got one question from Josh. He said, I normally would spray Certainty herbicide, which has sulfosulfuron in it in the past. And I believe that's the same as Maverick or Outrider.
Yeah, I think so.
And he said, I didn't get that done last fall. I'm wondering what would kill this particular grass weed. It's taller than the normal grass. Haven't seen it before. Josh is in Central Iowa. Is that quack, Brian? It looks a little bit like quack, and it's hard to tell from that right. picture, Josh. What I would do is see if it's a perennial weed.
Oracles is the next thing you're looking for. Go ahead.
Yep. Look for oracles at the end of the leaf blade. If it has two like clasping oracles that hook around the stem, that would be one thing. And then the other thing would be to look for rhizomes. So if you've got a perennial weed, when you pull that root system up, it's got roots running sideways underneath the ground and then popping up new shoots. So if it's that, quackgrass is really tough. And a lot of times we talk about Roundup being our best option to get that under control. And you say, I don't want to spray my yard out with Roundup. Some just will soak something and then rub that on the leaves just to try to minimize how much.
You're talking about a weed wick, basically.
Yeah, something like that. That might be the best option you got, because pulling it is not gonna solve anything. Others will say, well, I'm going to do tillage. I would not recommend that, because by tilling and chopping up those rhizomes, you usually end up with more quack grass coming back. So I would try to kill it with Roundup. That would be my favorite option.
Yeah, but again, Roundup's going to kill every grass, so unless you can just wipe it over the top, if this is taller than the rest of the grass, yeah, it's tough. The nice thing with Outrider and that active ingredient you were talking about earlier, the sulfosulfuron, it does have some activity on quack. I'm not going to say it's perfect, but it's actually labeled to control that particular type of grass.
All right. Pat had a comment about this. He said, if you guys didn't have Roundup, you wouldn't have anything to talk about. And he was mentioning quackgrass. He said, one thing you could do for quackgrass would be solarizing a lawn, which is basically putting a tarp over it. You'd have to cut the grass really short, put a tarp over it. And here's the challenge. Now, Pat, I would say this. If you were in, say, a raised garden, something like that, where you could completely shade everything, no problem. But when you're out in a lawn, the challenge that I see with people trying to do that is they don't put the tarp on a big enough area. For example, let's just say the quackgrass was in a 12-inch by 12-inch circle, just one little spot, and you put the tarp over 12 inches by 12 inches, what that quackgrass will do is shoot rhizomes out a foot outside that and pop up new plants. So your method definitely could work with the solarizing or the tarp, as long as you make that tarp big enough. Now, the other thing that you mentioned, I'm going to disagree with, because I have not seen this work. But you said if you cut that quackgrass short and often, what'll happen with Kentucky bluegrass rhizomes is they'll actually crowd the plant out. Now, I have found Kentucky bluegrass to be pretty tough. It's a tough competitor, no doubt about it. We've seen some even creep out into alfalfa and compete with alfalfa. I haven't seen it outcompete quackgrass in our geography, in our climate. Now, maybe in a different climate, that might work. Haven't seen that work in the north.
No.
I haven't seen it, because quackgrass is pretty dominant, and in yards that I've seen it in for 20 years or more, the Kentucky bluegrass hasn't choked it out. Now, maybe they weren't cutting the grass often enough, but I kind of doubt it. I just don't think that way is going to work.
Here's the other problem. It's probably going to take 6 months with the tarp on it. And are you really willing to live with a lawn or anything else having a tarp on it for 6 months to kill stuff out? Perennials are tough. I mean, to kill an annual, that's a whole different deal. But to kill a perennial, I mean, think about it. They'll survive here in the wintertime, and our ground will be frozen for 6 months. So, I mean, and even then, if you had a tarp on it for 6 months, I still doubt it would kill quackgrass. Maybe it will. I haven't tried it, but it would take a long, long time for a tarp on it. Personally, I'd feel more comfortable if you said, I'm going to put the tarp on for 3 years, and then I think most of the quack would be gone. It's bad. Quack is a terrible, terrible weed.
It is. It is. All right. Thanks for the comment, though. I appreciate that. I got one from PC. He said, you guys are complaining about bugs in no-till. Yeah, they might be an issue, but seems like you're complaining a lot about them. Hey, you know what, PC? I wouldn't complain about them if they didn't kill our crop.
I know. I'm going to complain about every weed, every bug, every disease, and because they attack our crops and hurt our net income.
And we're not complaining about no-till. That is one method that you can choose to farm with, and there's certainly a lot of pros with it as well. I know you're commenting on a pros and cons of no-till segment that we did. Hopefully you liked some of the pros that we said too. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.